conquer and we're going to take some. Is that understood?
Yes, sir.
That's what we're going to do, sweetheart. We are going to go and get some. Hey. All right, people, on the ready line. Yeah. Iron Lee!
Yeah!
Iron Lee!
Yeah!
Where are you?
The November issue of Exceptional Parent magazine has two themes: financial information and parenting more than one child with disabilities. Read all for free at www.epmagazine.com. Follow EP Magazine on Facebook, Exceptional Parent Mag, and on Instagram and X at EPMZine.
Monotony. It comes in all shapes and sizes. Dull, tedious, just plain boring. But what is this? A contender, perhaps? Something unboring by the looks of it. Jabs right at dull, an uppercut to tedium, something that keeps you on your toes, keeps your head on a swivel, a knockout punch to your old boring workouts. Welcome to Fight Camp.
Oscar Mike Radio is a proud podcast partner of Reach Across America Radio, heard every Thursday at 11 a.m. and Sunday at 8 a.m. Eastern. They're also big supporters of the nonprofit I Got Your Six, Two Lives at Once. And with every wreath you sponsor through Oscar Mike Radio, $5 goes back to this great organization dedicated to making a difference in the lives of veterans, law enforcement, firefighters, and first responders battling PTSD. Two Lives at Once pairs these brave men and women together with dogs rescued from kill shelters. In this way, two lives are saved at the same time by saving each other. Donate now. Go to wreathsacrossamerica.org/OscarMikeRadio to help. That's wreathsacrossamerica.org/OscarMikeRadio.
Marines are made for this. Made for the calling only warriors can answer. Made from an unshakable belief in our nation and a strength that comes from the determination to win together. But you'll have to earn your place among us, because you don't join the Marines. You become one.
Hello and welcome again to Oscar Mike Radio. My name is Travis, Marine Corps veteran and your host. Oscar Mike Radio is co-produced with Sinister One Productions. What's your podcast doing? I want to thank my sponsors, Joyce Asek of Asek Real Estate, Danielle Rocco of Echo 6 Ranch, and my supporters, Quezon Shaving Company, Exceptional Parent Magazine, and Fight Camp, Be Your Strongest Combination. I have a returning guest and a new guest for a special show as we wind down the year and coincidentally count down to number 500. I'm pleased to welcome back Colonel Wesley Martin, U.S. Army. Thank you, Colonel, for coming back with his friend and confidant, Dan Elder, Command Sergeant Major of the Army. Gentlemen, welcome to Oscar Mike Radio as we talk about the NCO Historical Society and how it helped make and give us perspective around Earn It, a story about William Gates and his story in the U.S. Army. Gentlemen, welcome to Oscar Mike Radio.
Thank you, Travis.
Thanks, Travis. Glad to be here.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm going to learn a lot in this fire hose time. I'm really excited. We're going to talk about the book. I want to delve into how the NCO Historical Society supports NCOs and tells that story and how it all wrapped up into the book. Just briefly, gentlemen, starting with Colonel Martin, just introduce yourselves, what you did in the Army, and then we'll go into some of the wider topics, please.
Colonel Wes Martin, I started out as an enlisted soldier in 72.
Got out in 75, came back in 77 as a second lieutenant, and then bounced between the reserve and active duty. Served several assignments, 123 months of command time. But my favorite assignment, and the most difficult, and probably most stressful, was when I was the senior anti-terrorism officer for all coalition forces in Iraq.
Mr. Elder.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Travis. Glad to be here. Great to meet your audience too. I'm Dan Elder. I was an Army Command Sergeant Major, served 26 years. I was a sustainer, an Army logistician, passed through all the ranks from squad leader, platoon sergeant, served as first sergeant. I was a drill sergeant, an instructor. I worked at the Army's Sergeant Major Academy developing curriculum. I went on for 11 years as a command sergeant major serving a battalion brigade at a operational one-star level command. And then I culminated my career as the command sergeant major of the United States Army Materiel Command, which is the senior logistics command for Army, and served again for 26 years. A great honor to serve our country. So glad to be here and let y'all know a little bit about what we're doing here since I retired.
So, this is fantastic, gentlemen. I'm having a great time already. And the title of the book is Earning. And, thank you, Colonel Martin, for saying this to me. One of the things we kind of talked about is how's leadership work in the Army at the NCO level and, throughout all the branches. And I'm reading through this book and I'm like, wow, this kind of encapsulates a lot of the things that I experienced in the Marine Corps, even though I wasn't an NCO. And so, my first question is, how did this come together with the NCO Historical Society and the NCO support to make this happen, gentlemen? It's kind of a broad-ended question, but this is the result of a lot of, love and effort for, Command Sergeant Major Gates's life and service.
How the book originally came together is Sergeant Major of the Army, retired Gates, and I were both living in Albuquerque at the time. And we got to meet each other at a military function, and we both had a love of history. So what we ended up doing is on the weekends, we would go to all the national historical sites, the parks, Fort Union, Pecos Pueblo. Anything that had history to it, Sergeant Major Gates and I would go, and we had a tape recorder on the console right between us, and we would just have conversations. And I was learning so much from him, even though I was now a lieutenant colonel myself, and I was learning things that I wished I knew when I was a private, and I wished I knew when I was a captain. And it was just such an exciting adventure. And Governor Ridge probably said it best about the book is it's an example for what can be accomplished when an officer and an NCO works together. Once Bill Gates and I finished the book, we were looking to who should we reach out to publish it. And we realized the right people to reach out to would be the NCO Historical Society. They had already done Jack Tilley's book, which Dan worked on extensively. And I reached out to Dan and he said, send us a sample chapter. And we sent the chapter from when Sergeant Major Gates was the first sergeant of the newly formed Ranger Company at the Ranger Battalion had just been fired up. And even though Bill was on the sergeant's major list, he was selected to be the first sergeant of Alpha Company. And at that point, I'll yield over to Dan.
So, Dan, for all of us out there, what is the NCO Historical Society and, what was your involvement in this project?
Yeah, thanks, Travis. So the NCO Historical Society is it's a virtual. I guess it's a virtual archive of 250 years of United States Army NCO history, stories, topics, of archival data, It's really a collaboration. It's a consolidation of things that relate to the stories of the NCO Corps. So let me go back, and I got to
Okay.
go backwards to get you to where we're at today.
No problem.
And so I'm going to tell a little history here too. In 1991, I bought my very first computer, first desktop computer. Think back, 91, and attached to it was this thing. I didn't even know what the heck to call it. It was a modem. And I didn't know what the heck you'd do with a modem, but I wanted to figure it out. And so I went to some computer user groups that, back in the day, people used to meet, at a bar, kind of like we do with car shows or something, where you like cars and coffee. Well, us computer nerds did stuff just like that. And so I went to this computer meetup and talking to some other people, and come to find out the way people communicated in communities before podcasts, before social media, blogs, and all this stuff was through these things called bulletin board services. And so I started kind of plinking around with these things, and I learned how to connect to other people and communicate virtually. And what we would do is you'd use your computer and your modem, and you would dial into a bulletin board service, and you would log in, and you could do all kinds of things. You can comment, you can join conversations, you could play games, you could download shareware. It was an interesting community. And so I decided that there was a gap, and I created my very first bulletin board service called the Old Soldiers Home BBS. And what I did is I brought together my love for the Army. I was a soldier, and this new thing, this new tech called computers. And I did that and ran actually two bulletin board services. I also ran the Fort Knox BBS, the Army's official BBS at Fort Knox, Kentucky, until I PCS'd and left. And then I started commercializing and doing some stuff. I went overseas, and I came back in 1997, and my bulletin board had been running. I had changed the brand and the marketing. And so in 1997, when I came back, bulletin boards were out. There's this new thing that was happening called the World Wide Web. In 1997, I was taking a course to learn how to code web pages. And as part of it, I had to create my own website. So there we go, all over again. I created the very first professional NCO website as part of a class project. And it caught on. It became very popular. And one of the things it was a clearinghouse for all things for NCOs that would help you be a better NCO. Now, this is 1997. Think about
Yeah.
that. And so we were recognized as the first ever to do a leadership forum, so much so that it grew and grew over time. The Army adopted it. And we gave in 2005, I had a bunch of volunteers, 25 volunteers all across the United States Army, sergeants who helped run this community. And so let me just tell you a little about the community, because it's important to the story.
Sure.
I created a subsection of the NCO website, the original web NCO website, called the NCO Historical Society. And it was just kind of a made-up name. But what I did is I put all these things together that related to the stories of enlisted leaders. Now, think about that as just in joint terms. And I use the word enlisted leader because it resonates with all of us, whether it's you're a Lance Corporal, whether you're a Sergeant First Class, whether you're Chief Petty Officer. We all have this role, this leadership role we have to do. And we have to learn as we, sometimes on OJT or go to the PME. But the fact is at that time, there was no Google. There was no, you couldn't, use AI. There was no place to go. And so what I did is I put all of these things together, like charts, like I don't know, battle drills. We would put together aids, finding aids. There would be pre-made, like speeches. If you had to go like give a speech or something, there were all of these documents that were shared from the community that were stored. We put them in buckets. We put them in. We organized them in a very functional way that you could find tools that you could use to do your job as an NCO. And that's how it all started. And so the NCO Historical Society specifically was more targeted toward capturing the stories of enlisted soldiers. The tagline I used was, "You've heard about the generals, now learn about the sergeants." When I came up as a soldier, I heard about people like MacArthur. I heard about Omar Bradley. I heard about all these great officer leaders. Even in the Army, we highlight Audie Murphy. Well, when Audie Murphy, earned his Medal of Honor, he was an officer. He went on to be promoted, and he was a battlefield commissioned. He was Mustang, and many of his exploits happened when he was an officer. And so, what I felt like at the time is the enlisted story had not been told, and there was no one place to go to bring all of this together. So that's how this came about. We moved it to its own independent domain. Right now, it's got reams and reams, hundreds and hundreds of documents that are for free, that are available to the world to go to and download these things so you can read, research, study, and learn more. And so, as a side project, is we also started producing books. So that's kind of where, this is kind of how this all got to this point. And I'll be glad to take pause for a second, see if you have any feedback or questions first before I go on.
Well, sure. We're going to get into the wider story. I guess my first question is then, what was it particularly about Command Sergeant Major Gates's life story for both of you that warranted this kind of project to tell his story? It might be a rudimentary question, but it does interest me that, there's a lot of NCOs, a lot of staff NCOs out there, but what is it about his story that really said, you know what, we need to tell it and have it be part of this organization?
I'll go ahead and take the lead first. In one example, it was accessibility,
Okay.
because Bill and I were right there together. At that time, I was also working with a lot with the first Sergeant Major of the Army, William Wooldridge. He was in the El Paso area. Bill was in the Albuquerque area, and the command that I was in charge of at the time was in El Paso. So at least once a month, I was linking up with Bill Wooldridge. And I was also working with another significant military figure at the time, and that was David Hackworth. Hackworth was like my father, my mentor. And he and Wooldridge knew each other. Matter of fact, on my website, there's pictures of Hack and Wooldridge and I together. But I had more accessibility to Gates. And as we were doing those trips all over New Mexico, and would meet during the week for lunch, and I saw such a massive volume of information. I said to him, I said, "We got to document this. We got to write a book." And he was very receptive. And it went it's just not from the weekend drives and talking, but now we're sitting at his kitchen table. And we're doing recordings for 3 hours at a time, minus Bill needing to go take a smoke once an hour. And so we got all the recordings done that we could. But then what happened is 9/11, and then the deployments to Iraq. In January 2003, I got deployed, a series of deployments. So Bill and I had to put it on hold until we were able to link up many years later. He had moved back to Louisiana. We lost contact, but we reestablished, and let's get it done. And we finished up the book. But the biggest thing was A, accessibility. But while I was doing that rec those recordings, there was such a massive amount of information coming from Sergeant Major of the Army Gates. I knew we had to document it. And some of it, and you'll look at, we're talking about men like Sergeant Victor Franco, his first mentor, his when Bill was a young enlisted soldier, and how Victor Franco mobilized him, how he took care of him, how he got him to the schools, the preparatory work they did before the schools, and then following all the way up to the people who had impact on him, and the development of things like the training plans, the going back to the Army Readiness Technical Evaluation Program, all correction, Army Readiness Training and Evaluation Program, putting it all together. And let's give it as a leadership manual and not just a personal history of one great soldier.
Dan, one thing that I hear a lot is the Army's NCO structure has changed. I keep hearing that, at one time we NCOs were allowed to lead, we were encouraged to lead, and that is changing. So I guess my question is, and I went through the site and I'm like, I'm a Marine, but I could go through this site and learn a lot about leadership from a very different branch, right? But still learn a lot about leadership right here at my fingertips. What is it about Army NCO leadership that's different than other branches and other militaries in the world?
Yeah, thanks. What a powerful question. What makes the Army non-commissioned officer, the enlisted leader of the Army, so much different? I think the ground forces traditionally, I think, use their NCO similarly. I think the Marine Corps follows, or they're unique in their own way, obviously, but I think they follow more the model of the Army. They mirror each other, I think, in the way that they use enlisted leaders as compared to the sea service. Again, just though I served at at senior levels, including working with joint forces and operationally, both in Bosnia, in Iraq, but also there's peer relationships that you have, and as I see how my counterparts, particularly in the Coast Guard, in the Navy, even in the Air Force, a lot of times the enlisted personnel are technicians, are specialists. They master their craft. And in the Army, again, that's where my experience is at. But I see in the Marines very similarly that they put a lot of trust in NCOs. I think the junior NCO in the Marine Corps probably has more responsibility, maybe more authority sometimes in the Army NCO, but I think that's more about scale and volume, and there's just so many Army NCOs. We've got layers. We've got this thing called the NCO support channel, which parallels and it doesn't replace, but it parallels the chain of command. Now, unfortunately, a parallel chain will sometimes cause friction in between our officer counterparts. Now, NCOs don't command. We don't command. We execute the orders of the officers appointed above us. And if we lose our way and think ever that we are commanding or leading organizations, I think we get a little off. But going back to your question, what makes the Army NCO so much different? There is structure. There is responsibility. There is this duality that we have where our senior officers have a counterpart, enlisted counterpart. At the platoon leader has a platoon sergeant who can step in and do the platoon leader's job in the absence of them, should they need to be. However, they're more experienced than their platoon leaders in most cases. Not always, but in most cases, they train. That's their role, is to train platoon leaders. And then the same thing happens at the company level, company, battery, and troop, where a commander who's experienced now, but still we assign them a senior NCO who sometimes 15, 20 years of experience, usually within that career field, who can advise, which is what we do, is advise. I think what makes today's NCO different than the NCO of the 1940s, the 1950s, and even during the Vietnam era, was the investment the Army has made in educating non-commissioned officers. That's one of the keys to what makes Army NCOs different. We have five levels of NCO PME. Starts at the basic level. We have a senior, advanced, a senior, a master, and then the pinnacle, which we call the sergeant's major course. There's some functional courses after that that most people don't really track. But even then, we have specialty schools. We have kind of charm school. We even have joint schools where we go off and work with our enlisted counterparts from the other services. So what I think is one of the biggest differences, and it is a result, and guys like, let's take it back. Let's take it back to the story. We're really talking about Sergeant Major of the Army, Bill Gates, and Sergeant Major of the Army was one of those Vietnam era soldiers who helped reconstitute the non-commissioned officer corps in the wake of really a tough war that we had in Vietnam. And oh, by the way, the sergeant major of the Army rank is relatively new in the United States Army. And it wasn't until 1966 that a sergeant major of the Army, the senior NCO of a service, of the Army service, and I say that specifically because the Marines were the first one to appoint a sergeant major of the Marine Corps. They had one in the 1950s. That's when their first one was created. The U.S. Army created the first position in 1966, and it was Sergeant Major of the Army Bill Woolridge, who Wes was just talking about. He was the first one to serve in that role. So it's still a relatively new position, and they serve at the pleasure of the Secretary of the Army, but they support their chief of staff. And it was through the influence of men like Woolridge, Gates. There's been 17 SMAs, and the current one right now, Sergeant Major of the Army Weimer, he is the 17th. There's only been three books written by SMAs, and one was the fifth, and it was very much a personal anecdote. It was his life story. I was a part of the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack Tilley's book. I helped him write his book. And so when Wes and the SMA Gates approached me, because of my work that I had done, I also did a special project for the Center of Military History, where the Army has an official history of the SMAs. And I was the general editor and interviewed and created a number of chapters for the official Army story of the Sergeant Major of the Army, that it only made sense that Wes and SMA Gates would approach me and the NCO History Center and say, Dan, we want the NCO history to society to publish this book. And that's how we got to this point.
Let me build upon something,
Sure,
Travis. You had
sure.
asked a question, and Dan just gave a great lead into it. And I agree, Gates's role, and it's in his book, the work to develop the not only the enlisted ranks, but it develops the officers' ranks. One of the things Gates always talked about was the three pillars of soldier development. One was the individual soldier, two was the command, and three was the formal schooling. And Bill always worked hard. He learned from Viktor Frankl. He learned from others how the unit should be building. And then when he became top soldier, as he moved along, he was pushing the NCO academies to reform. Another point you had asked, and it's real important, is you look at other NCO corps throughout the world. The biggest change I saw was in Ukraine. When I
Okay.
was the senior anti-terrorism officer in 2003, 2004 in Iraq, I worked with the Ukrainians. Their NCOs did not make decisions. They were using the old Soviet style, the Russian style of we will only do what we're told, and the Russian officer will tell us what to do. They learned from the Americans and they watched the Americans. I was there watching them watch the Americans and the American NCO style. Like if I died, my major took over. If he died, the sergeant first class took over. If he died, it went all the way down to our three stripe. We had no problems with that. The Ukrainians learned from us. When Putin invaded Ukraine, he was still thinking the old, he had came out of the KGB, a paramilitary
Right.
organization. He was still thinking the same way. And that's why so many Russian generals and colonels got killed on the front line, because they had to make all the decisions. Meanwhile, the Ukrainians had developed this ultimate weapon called the NCO Corps, that they were able to make decisions. They didn't have to run higher. And as a result, Russia thought it was going to get an easy walk into Ukraine. Initially, it did, but then the Ukrainians started fighting back. And in all honesty, the Russians were overstretched because the Ukrainians had adopted the American model of the work between the officer corps and the NCO corps. Dan, would you like to pick up on that?
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. What I really want to dig into now is talk to me about the relationship between officers and these enlisted leaders, because that's missed a lot of times, I feel.
Which one do
Yeah.
you want us to answer?
We'll talk with Dan first. What's
Okay.
the how's the NCO officer relationship work or supposed to work?
Yeah, I think understanding the officer relation, officer NCO relationship is really key, and it's imperative for soldiers of all stripes, whether you're officer or enlisted. It's really important that we understand that each has the role, and then it's important that we serve in those roles. And there are lines that have to blur, particularly in combat, when times are tough, when you do good hard training. Sometimes those lines blur. There's this word that some people kind of shy away from. There's officer business and there's NCO business, and some people kind of take offense to that because it's all Army business. It's all leadership, but there are some things that are functionally the roles and responsibilities of an NCO. Our officer leaders earn their authority. Their authority is presented to them by Congress. They are dictated within the Constitution. The non-commissioned officer's authority is not a part of our founding doctrine. It comes from the officers appointed above us. This is one of the toughest challenges for NCOs. Is what that means is you're, though there's some general military authority that we that all leaders have that are incumbent upon them, and that's expected of them. But you only have so much rope that you can, so much leash that you can operate within. And this is hard for some young leaders to understand. Is some commanders, they shorten the rope or lengthen the rope. That's the way it works, is commanders decide how they want to use their senior enlisted leader. Now there becomes problems if their enlisted leader counterpart doesn't understand where their length of their rope is, how far they can operate, and when they exceed that can affect the relationship. If the subordinate leaders across the organization don't know what lanes the enlisted leader operates in, that can cause friction in an organization. If a first sergeant has been tasked by his officer, his commander, to supervise or provide overwatch, there could be an extra set of eyes for your boss. If he or she's asked you to look at a certain area, but they haven't explained that to their subordinate officers, that's when people start to think NCOs are getting into their business. A platoon leader can really get their hackles up, if they think the first sergeant is getting in their lane. So it's really, you've got to draw clear lines of authority. Commanders do. They've got to be clear what their delegations are, not only to their enlisted leader, and enlisted leader needs to understand and have that feedback. But they also need to share that with their units, their organizations, so they know what those expectations are. Because there's nothing worse than this misperception that enlisted leader, a sergeant, is operating outside the boundaries, when really they've been tasked to do that by their boss. So I'd love to hear Wes's commentary on how do you delegate and how do you use your enlisted leader. But this has really got to be very clear between the two counterparts at each echelon.
How does that work from the officer's side then, sir?
Let me give you my side, because quite often other officers would tell me, well, you're too lenient or you're too strict, sometimes in the same breath. And Dan's right about the rope, but the rope is made of rubber. And if the NCOs are really doing a good job and you have their trust and confidence and they have your trust and confidence, it works well that you can let that thing stretch out, but you've got to give them top cover. Now, if, and I've had bad officers working for me, and I've worked for bad officers, but also, and even Hugh Shelton once, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, mentioned he's learned as much from bad seniors as he has from good ones. But you're flexible, and it depends upon the circumstance, it depends upon the situation. When I was a first correction, when I was a company commander, my first sergeant, Bill Lewis, I could give him total flexibility, and everybody knew that he and I work so closely together. If he was telling them to do something, they better do it because it was coming, because I was going to be totally behind him. Likewise, I joke sometimes, the reason I know so little about medicine is Bill Lewis, when he was my first sergeant, he came up as a medic. So some soldier would come to me and, sir, I don't feel good. Well, go see the medic. Well, that's the first sergeant. You're right. So, and Bill wasn't going to let him slack. And Bill and I worked so closely together, we were also interchangeable. Now, there were times when I would sit with him and sometimes we'd do it on the move. I'd tell him what needed to be done, and then he'd get with Ralph Cohen, my field first, or his field first, really, and he'd let the platoon leaders know. And we had such a communication line. But building upon what Dan was saying, that rope is made of rubber, and it depends upon, especially upon, the quality of the person you're working with, and then the situation.
Getting back to Earn It, the book's put together, and this is the thing that I got out of it, is Command Sergeant Major Bill Gates didn't think that leadership was something that was gifted to him. All through the book, there's this aspect that he had to earn his promotion, earn the right to do this, earn the right to go to that school. Earn It is very foundational to what he believed in. And he's not here, but did you pick that up as you're talking to him? Why did he believe so strongly in that aspect of earning it and not expecting somebody to give it to you?
One of the early questions Bill asked me is, he said, what were the last two words that Tom Hanks said in the movie Saving Private Ryan? The answer was, earn it. And as we got talking more and more, Bill said to me, that's what I want my book to be named. Because even in the North Carolina hills, he had to earn his living. His family had to earn their living. They had to take care of each other. His older sister, Alice, went and got a job, but she came back and shared the money with the family, buying them things that they need. When Bill ended up going enlisted his first tour in the Berlin Brigade, he watched a colonel, brigade commander, Bill Whelan. Awesome commander. Later, he was a three-star, and he was the one that blunted the Tet Offensive. He watched that man, how he worked hard, he worked closely with the troops. Then Bill got to go to some of the professional schools. When he went, well, like when he went to Ranger School, he had majors in the class, and they would go out and party every night. Bill Gates studied every night, but even before he went to Ranger School, Sergeant First Class Victor Franco had people who had completed the school put Bill through a course, their own little mini course, and everybody else going to the Ranger School. So Bill worked his heart out, and he came out as the honor graduate in Ranger School. And when he arrived back in Fort Campbell, there was a promotion freeze because the ranks were so tied up. Because he had graduated number one in Ranger School, then Major General Westmoreland came down and pinned his additional stripe on him because Bill had earned it. And when he became Sergeant Major in Korea and all the other places, he would go in and inspect the NCO Academy, and then he'd bring them up to standards. And in Korea, the soldiers who were attending were upset they weren't allowed to go out and party at night. And Bill said, no, you're here to learn, you're here to be all you can be. And that's one key thing that Bill really loved, that phrase, and I do too. Be all you can be, because it's up to the individual to be all he can be using those three pillars of education. And it's units to be all they can be, all the way up the ranks.
We're talking about Earn It, Dan, but as you go through the NCO, Historical Society site, there is a lot of information. Is there a book or document that I should start with first? Because it was almost like too much, which was a good problem to have. What would you suggest I go to first? And do you got something there that you can share with us? Because I'm glad to see that this is going to be part of it.
Yeah, great. So let me just tag on to Wes what he said first, and I'll talk a bit about the website, ncohistory.com. So I mentioned there's only been three books written by sergeants majors of the Army. And Bill is an old soldier. We had a chance to go and visit him just not too long ago. Wes and I did, as we presented him his copies of his book when we published. So this is a timeless leadership lesson. It's not just for soldiers. It's not just for our veterans. This is really a great lesson in humility. It's a great lesson in really a type of soldier that we have a modern soldier today, modern NCOs, modern sergeants, major. But these guys, they wrote the book. I mean, they literally wrote the book on how to do this. So this does join our inventory of NCO focus material. And so when I put the NCO Historical Society together, we create a website, ncohistory.com. It's all free. And so what I thought about is, I'm a researcher. I'm a citizen, a historian. I write books as well. Matter of fact, my latest book, NCO School, was just published last month.
Oh, really?
In parallel, while I was working with Wes and the SMA, I had just wrapped up writing a book on a Vietnam-era program called the NCO Candidate Course. And it's not so much to plug my book, even though I did. It's really about, it's a culmination of continuing to tell the story of the NCO Corps. This is, it's a feature, not a bug. And so I got to, again, go back a little bit to tell you about this. We didn't have, so soldiers, enlisted soldiers and the NCOs were not necessarily always considered professionals. That's what you did. You did a hitch in the military. You maybe a couple of years here, you did an assignment, you went to war, you came back. But for the enlisted soldier, it was a job. The officer corps has always been considered a profession. And the NCO corps didn't really start to professionalize until after the Vietnam era. And it was really through the Army's investment in education and training. They created a career plan. NCOs, Army NCOs, didn't have career plans. Stripes stayed with the unit for almost the entire history of the Army until, after we came out of World War II. When a soldier would move to a new unit, which didn't happen that often, but they would, if they were a sergeant, their stripes belonged to the regiment, and they would lose those. And so what happened is the only way to reward great soldiers in the day was to give them a commission. And so much NCO history has been lost because the best soldiers, the most honorable soldiers, not just warriors, but thinkers, tacticians, the best soldiers oftentimes, again, it was a feature, were promoted into the ranks of the officer corps. Though many have to go, we call it bootstrapping back then. They had to go back now and earn their education. Some would go off to professional military academies. West Point and the like. But just because that's the way the Army was designed, there just wasn't this great legacy. But really, when you peel it back, all the way back to 1775, the first badge, the first medal that we had was called the Military Badge for Merit. And it was the Purple Heart, and it was a sash. And the only people that were ever awarded it were NCOs who had battlefield honor during the Revolutionary War, only NCOs. And so it's stories like that that most people don't know about. And to me, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to put things together. And so what I've done is I've organized through this thing we call the vault. Also, I have a listing, an index
Okay.
of documents that are there by topic. And the topics are, created by me, and after, 20, 30 years of running websites and communicating with the larger audience. I'm still a social media advocate. I still, besides doing podcasts and blogs and writing and stuff, I still try to keep my fingers involved. And so I've tried to curate. I call myself a curator. I curate this NCO knowledge into classifications that may make sense. So if you're really trying to find a topic, the easiest way is you go to the search bar and you type in a keyword. That's how you find it. But if you really want to do some deeper research, you can go to the index in our menu, and you can select in the index, and there's a listing of things. But the vault has really some of the most popular things that people are looking for. There was this article written by a guy named a couple of guys, Doc Banshin. Wes probably knows Doc Aviator, and Braden. They wrote this article many years ago in a magazine, Parameters, an Army magazine, called The Problem with the Command Sergeant Major Program, which has been, it's been a sore spot for the NCO Corps ever since it was written, but there was a lot of truth to it. So a very popular article. People always come looking for it. So what we've done is we've also put some articles or research information right at the tips of the fingers who those who are searching, but we also have indexes and a quick, easy search bar that allow you to find what you're looking for.
Well, thank you. Colonel Martin, Governor Tom Ridge was, involved with the introduction for Ernan. How did he get involved, and what was his feeling as he read the book?
Tom, he and I first started working with each other, ironically, over the Iranian resistance.
Okay.
There was a resistance organization dedicated to bringing democracy to Iran. And Tom himself was a staff sergeant in Vietnam. Then he got out, went back. He was probably the one of the few Harvard-educated NCOs in Vietnam. He got drafted. He served well, and he always kept his loyalty to America and to the military. So what happened is he ended up going back to Erie, became a county prosecutor, became a congressman, ran for governor, and then when 9/11, George W. Bush reached down and said, "I need you to take over Homeland Security," which he did. And then Tom and I later started working closely together, and we see each other about once a month. And I was telling him over the years the work that was going on, and he was always encouraging me, always, let's get the story there. So when it came time for an introduction, I asked Tom if he would be willing to do it. He said, "I'll be glad to do it." And he did. And the introduction, you can see into Tom when you see into the introduction. A very great, dedicated American. Also, the endorsements that we received from the three four-star generals, George Casey, former chief of staff of the Army, Jim Conway, former commandant of the Marine Corps, Chuck Wald, Air Force four stars. When you think about it, to have an Air Force, Marine, and Army four-star come out and say, "This is a great book." And then Louis Freeh, former director of the FBI, came out and said, "This book applies to more than just the Army." All of us work together frequently. And as a result, all those four people, or five people, were cheering me on while I was doing it, and even saying, "No, you can't put this in there." A couple things. One thing to deviate for a second that we need to give Sergeant Major Gates credit for. Historically, when the Army would have a reduction in force of its officer corps, decades past, these officers who were basically being fired were then allowed to go into the NCO Corps, and they would jam up the ranks.
I
And
remember reading about that. Like, that was weird.
it was disgusting because you'd have NCOs, and it happened to me when I was a young junior enlisted soldier. All of a sudden, we had a bunch of rifted officers into our unit. Some of them were very good, but they jammed up the promotion system. Gates was adamant that we are not going to do that because when Carl Vohner was chief of staff of the Army and Gates was the top soldier for the Army, they were planning on having a reduction in force because during the Reagan years and Bush years, military got big and everybody got to stay and everybody got to be promoted. That's for another story, another time, but people were getting promoted too easily. Now it comes time they need to set the cut the ranks down. And Gates fought tooth and nail, and people may not have liked it, but they had to accept the fact that he and General Vohner were so close to each other that they Vohner listened to him. And as a result, the rifted officers were not pushed into the NCO Corps to once again jam up that promotion system, one last thing as to how close they were. When Vono first appointed Gates to be his sergeant major, when they were in the room privately, General Vono said to him, "When we're in the room together, we can call each other by first name." And Gates says, "Okay, you've got two first names I'll use." General Vono said, "Really? What are they?" And Gates says, "General and Sir." And Gates, dealing with Bill Gates, I can actually see him saying that. "Yes, sir, you've got two first names, Sir and General."
We've had a great time. Time has flown by quickly. Closing questions. I'll start with Dan first. When people go to the NCO history site and look at everything that is there, what do you hope they take away from it, or even better, want to add to it?
Yeah, thanks for the add to it part. That's so far this has been a labor of love of just a few people to put this together. And I love contributions. Matter of fact, there's an ask me. I love answering questions. There's so many vast questions about the Army NCO Corps, and sometimes just finding somebody who has the wherewithal to provide that answer. And we'd love to have documents, firsthand accounting documents, not necessarily stories or legends, but we use back channel messages, regulations, all types of stuff. What do I want people to take away from the site? Without having to drive or fly to the National Archives, if you are doing research on an NCO or NCOs in general, just think about Hollywood that seems to get the military message wrong, 90% of the time, right? If you're trying to understand what your father, your grandfather, your uncle, your spouse did when they served in the military, when they say I was this or I was that, what is a sergeant? If you want to know about what were the roles of the NCOs, if you're a sergeant somewhere and you're looking to model after good leaders like the sergeants major of the Army, we've talked about all 17 of them, but most particularly Bill Gates. And I also want to mention too, again, just call it back. If you want to know about Governor Ridge is a graduate of the NCO candidate course that was created in Vietnam. He also, coincidentally, we did this separately. This had no relationship, but he also wrote the foreword to NCO School because he was a shake and bake sergeant, which was a program that was created during just for the Vietnam War to help create fire team and squad leaders to fight in the jungles of Vietnam. And he went through that program, Governor Ridge. So if you want to know about him, when you're done reading Earn It, take a look at NCO School and you'll learn more about Governor Ridge and his what he went through to become a sergeant. And that's what this is about. I'm sorry, the last thing, and I'll shut up, is NCO, to understand the NCO story, you've got to start somewhere. And NCO Historical Society at NCOhistory.com is a great place to learn more about Army NCOs.
We'll have those links in the Oscar Mike Radio show post and website post, Dan. And thank you so much for sharing with us. Sirs, last question. This seemed more than just a project. This seemed like a true labor of love, not just for the command sergeant major, not just for Bill himself, but as a friend, and to show how brotherhood transcended the officer NCO relationship. My last question to you is, sir, is what do you want people to leave with when they finish the book and get to know Bill in a way that they might not otherwise get to know him?
The greatest thing about Bill, and many great things about Bill, he started out basically the family, I don't want to say poverty, but they were in tough straits. But he worked as his father worked, as his mother worked, his family worked, and he kept that work ethic all the way up. Anybody who wants to go back to the Army slogan, be all you can be, anybody who wants to in the ranks, they can push as hard as they can and they can succeed, as did Sergeant Major Gates. And in all honesty, the book was written as a guide to help people show at each one of the ranks, what's available, the schooling system. The military has a dynamic schooling system. That's how come I was able to leave the ranks in 75 and return in 77 with a commission, because when I was in Korea, I went to night school continually, except when we were in the field, and I was in 2nd Infantry Division. There was a lot of that. But the education system worked with us. And so rather than going out and partying at night, I was at the education center working on a degree. The Army offers that, all the branches of service. And one last thing I would say about my relationship with Bill and with Dan and with you and all the people I work with who really care is often I'm asked, whether it's in peacetime or wartime, what do you fight for? And well, is it the country? Is it the flag? I say this: we serve the nation, we defend the Constitution, we rally to the flag, but we fight for the one on the left and the right. And I was honored for several years to have Sergeant Major of the Army Gates on my flank.
Well done, well done. Again, ladies and gentlemen, you get to read a book that kind of shows you how these relationships work, and it's all about relationships, even when we're in a wartime or peacetime setting, following orders or accomplishing the mission. I want to thank both of you gentlemen for coming on and sharing so candidly and openly with me. I think we just scratched the surface, but hopefully we can go back and delve into some of these matters more in depth. I'll have the links to the NCO history website and check that out, because even as a Marine, there is plenty to learn from our Army brethren. And I'll just close with this. I still go back to what General Powell said about leadership. And he's right. If your troops are not coming to you with their problems, you're not fit to lead. And that has certainly influenced how I try to lead my teams, in my civilian life now. So again, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time, and I appreciate you talking with me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Travis. Thank you.
Again,
Take care
folks,
now.
get this book. It's on the site. I'll have that. NCO School is my next one to check out. I'm Travis with Oscar Mike Radio. We're Mission in Flight. We'll see you next time.
The biggest fear Gold Star families have that their child will be forgotten.
We need to never forget freedom wasn't free.
It's the fact that they give us the life we have now. We should remember them and like give thanks to them.
If I can be a part of something today that's going to make the surviving family of any of these veterans, these heroes, feel better tomorrow, then it's worth it.
That one wreath symbolizes one family that was able to smile because of the generous donations.
To sponsor a wreath and honor a veteran, visit wreathsacrossamerica.org.
Thank you for listening and watching Oscar Mike Radio, where our active duty service members and veterans are in action and the mission is in flight. Oscar Mike Radio is an Oversized Load Co-Sinister One production. If you are a veteran or know a veteran who needs help, please dial 988 and press 1 for the Veterans Crisis Line.